Hey guys, it's me, Corinne. I got a new podcast on Podcast One called So Random with me, Corinne. Tune in for the good, the bad, the ugly, and even embarrassing. Pee in your pants convos all the way. Unfiltered, oh yeah. Download new episodes every Thursday at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe at Apple Podcasts.
Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Sesternino back here once again with you. Thanks for checking out this bonus podcast. I don't know what it is about the end of the season. It just breeds a lot of extra podcasts as we come down the home stretch. And this week, Dalton Ross of Entertainment Weekly put out his list that he polled the readers of Entertainment Weekly for their list of the top all-time Survivor winners, something that I certainly have a lot of interest in following. So Dalton Ross was good enough to come on with us here today and talk about the findings of that list. Of course, I'll have that posted for you guys in the show notes for this episode. A couple things before we get into Dalton. For those of you guys who are patrons of Rob as a Podcast or are interested in becoming one, we have a new video posted into our Rehapisodes web series. We shot a lot of video, or I shot a lot of video of myself going down to Austin. So we have a 14-minute video that we just posted this weekend of my trip down to Austin. If you want to see some behind-the-scenes footage of what goes into putting on a live show. So if that's something that might be of interest to you, be sure to check that out. I'm also in the middle of putting together our best of 2017 podcasts. I always like to, at the end of the year, make an episode of the best, usually the funniest moments from RHAP. Also, you know, most interesting things as well can make it into that list. So if you have any suggestions, I set up a Google form. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/2017moments, and you can then just leave us the episode or the moment that you want to hear in the best of 2017 recap show. And I'll probably have that episode out sometime in the week in between Christmas and New Year's on robhasawebsite.com. And if you happen to be still doing any holiday shopping, you want to check out any of the offers from our podcast sponsors or even our links for amazon.com and check out all the great deals that they have there, go to robhasawebsite.com/gifts for the links and promo codes for all of those offers. All right, I'm very excited to bring this guest back to the podcast. And while I feel like I see him all the time, that this has been quite some time since he has been back with me on the podcast. In fact, the last time that he and I talked back in February of 2015, we were talking about the host of The Celebrity Apprentice, Donald Trump. Please welcome back Entertainment Weekly's Dalton Ross. Dalton, how are you?
Oh, man, Rob, it's always great to chat Survivor with you. I remember when I went out for All Stars, which was my first time ever on location for Survivor. I was so excited to talk to you because, you know, I said, here's a fellow Survivor nerd. And I remember this, I'm sure, more than you do, because it's a whirlwind for contestants that day. And you're talking to tons of outlets and what have you. But you came in the room and they had you separated into groups of six, like by the tribe. Yes. So you didn't allegedly... You didn't know, allegedly, who was on the other tribes and who else was there. I remember you came in with your group, and then you came in at your time, and I was really pumped to, you know, talk with you, Survivor, and you told me about this binder you had with notes on everyone, and we geeked out, and it's super cool that, you know, however many years later that we still get to sit here and geek out and talk about Survivor. I love it, man.
Yeah, a long time. It's going to be almost 15 years from that, believe it or not. I just had my anniversary of when I got voted out in the Amazon, so it's not much longer after.
But I
didn't know where you were going with that story. I thought you were going to say that I came in and I was like a total douche and made like a terrible impression.
No, but you know what was, just real quickly, I don't want to sidetrack it too much with, as I said, swapping old war stories, but to give people a little insight, what was so fun about that time out on location is that it was right after Pearl Islands. And Pearl Islands was the one where they infamously told the contestants, yeah, we're taking you to a press photo shoot, and then threw them off the boat. So I don't know if you had any fear of this, but a lot of the other contestants were really worried that this was another ruse, that the game was going to start. And Sue Hawk would not go, even like to a different interview room, she wouldn't go anywhere without her shoes were like tied around her neck. She carried everything with her she thought would need for the island at all times. Ethan, at one point, I remember I was doing the interview, and like, you know, Westcam, the helicopter they use for all those helicopter shops, started flying by, and he literally froze. And I sort of messed him like, well, Ethan, I got to tell you, the game has just begun. He's like, wait, what? I'm like, dude, I'm the game is not begun. I'm nobody. This is not the way the game would begin. There's no cameras in here. But you guys, at least some of you, were really freaked out about that, which was kind of fun.
We all were. And to the point where I wore on the plane, like we were flying all down to Miami and then eventually to Panama together. And I was wearing sort of like, I don't know what the right word is, like the basically like, I don't want to say breakaway, but sort of like the cargo pants that you could like unzip the legs. And I'm pretty sure if I wasn't wearing a bathing suit, I had one like in one of the cargo pockets of the pants I was wearing because the survivors, they're always trying to beat the system.
I kind of wish they'd do that again sometime. They don't do stuff like that anymore, but everyone was on such high alert and it was so hysterical. And you had those like quick dry pants on, that you zip off and things. And it was a total blast, man. And I was a kid in a candy store there, you know, like you go on location for your first time. And obviously Wiggler can talk about this and Gordon and we've been trying to get you to come out to no avail, but it was super fun, and to come out for that All-Stars thing and see people like you out there in playing the game was just, it was great, man. I loved it.
Okay. Well, Dalton, this was a huge week for you, coming off of a previous huge week where you got to have dinner with Stephen Fishback and myself, a once-in-a-lifetime experience in Austin. We had some great barbecue down in Austin while you were visiting Fear the Walking Dead. But this week, maybe even topping that, you came out with the updates and a completely new list to your season rankings, and you polled Survivor fans on the ranking the best winner of all time.
Yeah, thank God it was the fan vote and not my vote. I think the most hate I ever got from Survivor fans, and I've gotten plenty over the years, was when I did a winner's list. And of course, you know, everyone's like, you're an idiot, you're a moron, you're so stupid, I hate you, whatever. And, you know, people get pretty extreme. But anyway, I thought, you know, it'd be okay, you know, I get it. You let's have your voice heard. You
have
know,
at
like,
it.
Totally. Have at it, you know, have at it. So, I set up this whole sort of poll survey, whatever you want to call it, and said, let's have the fans rank all 34 winners at this point, and we'll see what they come up with. I thought it'd be interesting. I thought it'd be really interesting to see the fan base is very loud. The fan base is very vocal. The fan base is very intelligent. And I wanted to see how they would rank the. So I was. This was fun because I was fascinated to see the results. I couldn't wait to see what they were going to do.
Okay, now you yourself came out. You didn't re-list everything, but you came out and you gave your number one for the winner rankings. And I think it was a surprise to some, maybe not a surprise to some others. You said Kim Spradlin, number one.
Yeah, I think she's the one thing I should say to make it clear is that this was supposed to be based just on the season they won.
Right.
So, you know, everyone read my criteria over and over, but just for those that didn't, I'll give it quickly. So, you know, that means, you know, you don't punish JT for what he did in Heroes versus Villains and writing his love letter to Russell. That shouldn't affect his performance in Token Jeans. You know, same way that if you're a Sondra fan, and aren't we all, and Sondra belongs on the Mount Rushmore Survivor, no question, but the fact she won twice shouldn't necessarily impact the ranking on those seasons, unless you want to say, hey, she came into Heroes Villains a winner, that makes her more of a target, so I'm going to put that up higher. But, you know, that she won Heroes versus Villains should not impact her ranking for Pearl Islands. You know, I mean, it works all different ways. So just rank the people on how they did in that season. And there's a lot of people that have played really great. But for me, Kim Spradlin just sort of gave the best single season performance. If you look at how she did, strategically, socially, in the challenges, controlling the game from start to finish without people necessarily realizing she was controlling the game, doing it her first time out on a level playing field against other first-time players. And we can get into that with some of the others that didn't do that. one in particular. But so to me, yeah, to me, she's the best single season winner ever.
Yeah, I've arrived at the same conclusion looking at it as just one season. I do think that if you were going to present the counter argument for Kim, I do feel like in a lot of these rankings and lists, she has done very well. And I wonder if now Kim has now somehow gone from very underrated, maybe at the time she played, to potentially being overrated, because who could live up to the hype at this point? I do feel like that also the gameplay, even from Survivor 24 to now, I think is much more accelerated. And I think that she's playing in a season there where there's maybe the most people ever that have no idea what they're doing, to the point where even Jeff, like, reportedly got so angry with casting after Survivor One World. They're like, hey, we need to have people that know how to play the game after that season. I feel like it's a weak field in Survivor One World.
Excellent point. You're 100% right. It was a weak field. It was one of the, I think, honestly, the worst cast ever, which is kind of interesting because they ended up bringing back a fair amount of those people to play again, and not Kim. But it's it is a weak cast, but all in the same level field, all first-time players.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could say, well, you got to face who you face. And you say, well, what and why are you? Because I did. I did deduct points from Boston Rob. Boston Rob was playing for his fourth time against people playing for their first time, and especially the tribe he was on. We're all really starstruck newbies. Had Russell and Rob picked the different rocks or whatever and been on different tribes, it could have been a very different season. It was a little more of an older, more seasoned, more skeptical tribe that Russell got put with that maybe would have offered a little more resistance. So you could say, well, listen, it's the same argument for Kim and Rob, you know, weak competition. But, you know, Kim was a first year playing against first years. Rob was a fourth time playing against, first timers. So I did deduct points for that. I don't know how you feel about that, Rob, but I did. And one other thing I'll say quickly about Kim is that you're right, the game's changed a lot. And I guess you could ask the question, has anyone dominated in all three phases since the game has become more accelerated like that? Certainly people dominated before Kim, but I would argue that Kim had, like, for instance, that's the difference between Kim and Tom Westman to me, is that Tom Westman was on a dominant tribe. They never lost one immunity challenge as a tribe. Yes, they did have to get Willard out when both tribes had to get someone out, but they never faced anything. No tribe swaps, right, at all. And, you know, Kim did have to deal with some of that. There were some tribe swaps. There's idols. There were, you know, certain things happening that she did have to manage that some of those earlier dominant winners did not.
Yeah. And Boston Rob in Redemption Island, I never penalized him for it being his fourth time, just looking at it as like a single season accomplishment. I just felt like that between Rob and Kim, I just felt like that more people came away from the game with positive feelings about Kim than ultimately the people in Redemption Island did about Rob. And I felt like that maybe that was more of a testament to Kim's social game.
Yeah, absolutely. Rob did that whole thing that then, you know, Coach kind of tried to do, making kind of final two deals with everybody and then burning those bridges as he made his way towards the end. But the competition he put himself there with was so weak that they still had to give him the victory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could argue if you're going to say Boston, it should be Boston Rob, and we'll get into, you know, how many people said that in a minute. The argument would be like, well, he was so masterful at bringing goats with him that he could burn the bridges, and it doesn't matter. And once they hand you the $1 million check, who cares how they feel about you? It's all about whether they hand you the $1 million check. That would be sort of the counter argument to that, I guess.
And if you want to see the full list, of course, that you can read it on EW.com. If you follow at Dalton Ross on Twitter, you can get the link to it. I'll also post the link in the show notes for this podcast. So the number one person overall, drumroll please, the listeners or the viewers voted Parvati Shallow for Survivor Micronesia. And I have to say, I do not agree with this call.
I don't either. And I would say, I don't know how you feel about this, Rob, and I'll be interested to hear your take. If you did ask me who's the best Survivor player overall,
right,
taking all their seasons or everything, my answer, I think, is Parvati. Because Parvati has been a challenge beast in terms of endurance, socially and strategically, has done great. I think she was better in the season she didn't win in Heroes Villains than she was in Micronesia. So she is probably my all-time best Survivor player. But she's not the single season best winner for me. For me, as I mentioned, as Kim, but she came in first, and what was interesting about that, she did not get the most first place votes. Because remember, this is a ranking.
Okay.
So it was a pain in the ass to do. I don't know if you ever did it. It was like, there's 35 people, and you have to rank all of them. You got to move things around. It was a little easier on desktop. On mobile, it was a nightmare to do. Mm-hmm. But it took a lot of time. But it calculates in ways where you put everyone. So she had the most top five rankings. Like, she didn't have the most number one. She had the second most number one, but she had the most top five. Everyone agreed that she's one of the best of all time, and that's why she ended up, the calculations, as number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I feel like, and when I went back with Josh and we rewatched all of the seasons, you know, I kept my own winner ranking in terms of like watching a season and then placing people in the same way that you sort of done your season ranking, you know, in real time. And so I did my winner ranking, and I thought that Parvati was more of a middle of the road winner based on her performance just in Survivor Micronesia. And I agree that when you factor in what she was able to do in Survivor Heroes versus Villains, that she does work out to be, I think, one of the best three players of all time. But that single performance to me was just a so-so winning performance.
I think it might be also, it's a great season. As you know, it's tied for my best season ever. Has something to do with it. I think her overall dominance in other seasons is part of the reason. But do remember, if there aren't so many injuries in Survivor Micronesia, and they do a final three over final two, and you know how I feel about the final three, I'm not a fan, so I'm not hoping for that. But if that happens, Suri probably wins that season, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit up in the air whether or not she wins or not. But I've definitely heard people say that she would have won if that was a final three. And it wasn't like that Amanda and Parvati were planning to go a different way. They were very right. willing to go to that final three with Suri, and potentially could have lost to her. So I do think that she got lucky in that regard. So I do think that with these returning players, I think that this is where it was really tough to sort of decipher what's going on here. Now, Richard Hatch is number two on the list. I think Richard Hatch is too high, with all due respect.
I get it. I get why he's so high. I mean, listen, you know what the argument is for Richard Hatch. Is that he, you know, he was the first, not just the first, but set the template. You talk about against the, you know, competition. He gets out there. Everyone else thinks they're there for a vacation. You know, everyone else is like, has like Dr. Sean as these weird, mm-hmm. Just vote people out by this dumb, stupid system I came up with, or, and what have you. And, you know, obviously the term alliance that he came up with, and he was just on a different level from everyone else. And for those first few years, everyone was copying what he did. So if you're going to vote Richard Hatch, that's why you do it. I don't have a problem with it. I don't think anyone necessarily is wrong for saying that. But he also didn't have to do as much necessarily to get to the end with some of those things. Yeah, he wouldn't necessarily be my number one, but I totally get why people would have put him there.
Let me talk about the number three and number five person on the list, and that is Sandra Diaz-Twine. She comes in number three for Survivor Heroes versus Villains. She comes in number five for Survivor Pearl Islands. At the risk of angering Sandra, I feel like that she's, way too high double. To take the combined performance, I think she's one of the top three players, but I don't think that either of those victories was a dominant sort of controlling masterstroke by Sandra.
I agree 100%. To make everyone in this game really bored with Rob and I agreeing with each other a lot, don't worry, we'll mix it up a little bit later. But I totally agree. And again, if there's a Survivor Mount Rushmore, she's on it.
Yeah.
She's on it. Like, no one, like, and in many ways, I may be way off on this, by the way, but in many ways, I was most impressed with her in Game Changers. Some of the stuff she was doing on Game Changers was so aggressive, and watching her form alliances in like 5 minutes against people when she came in as the only two-time winner ever in the game, I was super impressed with what she did in Game Changers. And I will say this, I think they're too high, I agree, but they got the better performance higher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Heroes Villains, she was trying to get Russell out. No one would work with her to do it. My feelings on that season, I think Parvati played the best game that season. But Sandra is great, but on single season performance, I wouldn't have had her top five either.
So we're on the same page there. Not too much to debate. Kim comes in six from the fan vote. Tony was seven here. How did you feel about Tony? Were you buying or selling Tony at seven?
That's really interesting. I love Tony, and I don't know if I just love him because I find him endlessly entertaining. Definitely the most aggressive winner that Survivor's ever had. That's not to sound like completely like Jeff Probst, because, you know, he loves, you know, aggressive, you know, go for the throat games, but it's fun to watch. And I'd rather have that than someone out there just sort of completely coasting. So I love Tony. I mean, again, how are you going to judge it? This is hard. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't have him this high. I love him. But it feels a little high considering some of the other people that I thought were too low. How do you feel about Tony?
Yeah, this is around the area where I have Tony in my list. So I just think that based on that one season, one game that he played, and I wonder if people maybe had a bias against him because of Game Changers, and maybe he would have been higher had it been pre-Game Changers. But I think that when you go back and take a look, you know, he really was the dominant strategic force in that season. So I feel like that this is right around where you'd rank him. I mean, there were a lot of things that ended up, you know, working out in his favor, which, you know, you can't really say, like, where at the whole, like, the biggest point in the game, the swing where it was Trish that was able to talk to Cass and get her to vote out Sarah Lucina, that, you know, at the final 11. At that point, you know, that's not his move, but he did do so many different things. And I think that he really did energize, you know, whatever sort of like run of, you know, exciting gameplay that we've seen in the last like 4 or 5 years. I think that that comes from Tony.
Yeah. If you're going to ask me, like, you know, and listen, everyone has their different criteria and is judging on different things. If the criteria that I decide to use is most exciting Survivor winner, he's, you know, top three, like, there's no question. So I have no problem with him being here. There are a few players maybe that we'll get to that I thought should have been higher that I probably would have put above him. But, you know, I think he probably still would have cracked my top 10 probably. Okay. Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of the who's too high. I think a lot of people that are probably in the right spot. Tom Westman, then Yule is at 9, JT at 10. Issues for me on any of those.
I would have had Tom. I talked about people I'd have a little higher than Tony. Tom is one of them. I mean, you go back to that season and listen, if it's dominating wire to wire, that's Tom. And if it's dominating wire to wire, that's JT. I really think JT was punished by his moves he made in other seasons. He got only 1% basically of first place votes. Only 1% of people voted for him in first place. And I want to get your perspective, Rob, because that's the one season where, I mean, he won, you know, unanimously. Sorry, Fishback. But he also had people from the other tribe falling all over themselves to screw up their own game, like Coach and Tyson. And I'd never seen anything like that. They just fell in love with the guy. It was unbelievable. I think JT, the same way we say Sandra is, you know, sort of getting maybe, overinflated just because of her overall over a bunch of different games, what she's done. I think JT was definitely punished.
He's the reverse.
Like, oh, he made all these stupid moves in other games.
No, I agree. I think that he's probably the winner that's done the most to sort of like tarnish their legacy in returning games. And for me, I think that I have JT around 13 in my rankings that I did through 30 seasons. And I think the thing that for me, it's hard to untangle what was JT and what was Steven. I know that the jury all votes for JT at the end, but like in the real time 39 day adventure, I think it's hard to assign all of the credit to JT and just have Steven as the wingman. Maybe I'm biased.
Maybe. And, you know, I love Fishback as well. I mean, contrary to what everyone may think with all the tweets that I do making fun of him every week, I love the guy. And, but, you know, like I said, watching JT doesn't make it to the end without, you know, just totally winning over those people from the other tribe. But I get it. I totally get it. And, like, I got to say this. I've turned around on JT. Yes, I was like everyone else, like, on the heroes, villains, and that, you know, the idol he gave to Russell. Like, what are you thinking? And yes, it was definitely a what are you thinking move with Brad Culpepper in for Game Changers. But yeah, man, listen, if you're going to keep bringing back players, and I'm the one person that moans the most when you keep bringing back the same ones over and over, I almost think they really should cap it. But I bring back JT every single season because he's going to give you fireworks. You know what I mean? He's going to go for it, even if at his own expense.
Yeah. I like the idea of a cap, either a cap or a last chance season where it's like, all right, we brought these returning players back and then this is it. They've signed a contract that they can never return to Survivor again. It'd be very exciting.
I love that, Rob. I love last chance.
Last chance.
Second chance. Give it last chance.
Retirement
I love
match.
It. And this is your last chance to win. That's brilliant.
Yeah. And going back to Tom Westman, that I actually have him higher up in my rankings. I think I have him around 3 because of, you know, I just, you know, how dominant are you and how much do people, the rest of the people that are out there just really love you during the season? And maybe for Tom, not everybody loved him, but a very dominant performance.
He might be, you know, we said Kim was our number one. I mean, if I wasn't going to Kim, it may have gone Tom. Who was your number two?
Rob in Redemption Island.
Boston Rob. Yeah. I get it.
Okay.
I get it. Yeah.
You have Cochran at 11. How do you feel about that?
By the way, before we get into Cochran, I don't think I said this. Boston Rob did get the most first place votes in this poll.
Oh, interesting.
He was number four on the list.
He's polarizing.
He got the most first. He was very polarizing. And that is perfect segue to Cochran. Because that's Cochran. He got more first place votes than Tom. He got more first place votes than Yule. He got more than JT, who I said only got like 1%. I think Cochran was around 4%, I think he got.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot more than JT. But as you know, Cochran is polarizing. There's a lot of people that had him very low as well. And so he ended up at number 11. I don't know how I feel about Cochran. It's kind of interesting because, as you know, I think I like this season more than most people. I hated it at first. Just like everyone else. I think I hated it pre-merge. But I tend to, in my rankings, over-reward for good post-merge episodes, and I like the stuff that happened post-merge. But I've always been a little conflicted on him. You know that how I felt about his first performance. You and I debated that, that whole rock-pulling thing. I hated that maneuver. I thought he guaranteed there's no way to win the game after doing that. I wouldn't say you necessarily defended it, but you liked it more than I did. I don't know. How do you feel about Cochran?
So I have him about middle of the road. I think I have him 16 overall.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, he really, while he is not sort of like the person who's out in front that entire game, I mean, he doesn't make a bad decision that entire game.
Right.
Like, he has like his finger on the pulse of everything. He ends up winning 4 immunities, I believe, somehow along the way. So it is like a pretty dominating performance at the point where, you know, from where Philip goes out, and, you know, it's just basically whatever he wants to have happen happens.
I guess, and the question is, do you reward or deduct for this? And I don't know the right answer, but I remember talking to him and Dawn afterwards, and they basically were like, basically saying, listen, I don't want to give the wrong impression. Nothing in Survivor is easy, especially getting to the end and winning the money. It's not easy. But what they basically said was, it was really easy, just comparatively. And they said that to me, and then if you watch the season and you look at it, you sort of realize what they're talking about. It wasn't like, oh, like this is it, we're going up, we have to do this crazy thing to save ourselves. There were always kind of other targets. There were always kind of other people that were going at each other, and they didn't have to do a whole lot. Now, you can say, well, then, you know, they didn't build their resume, or you can say they didn't have to do anything, like, because they kept themselves camouflaged.
And they knew each other from the Survivor South Pacific as well. So they came in with sort of being on, you know, they were both from Savaii originally. So they had that sort of, you know, shorthand coming from a previous season.
Real quickly, proving what adult I am and how stupid I am. I did the whole, you know, pre-interview with Cochran as they're heading out there. And I basically said, I'm like, why are you, there's no way after what you did last season that you can win. Like, why are you even going? There's literally no way you could win. And of course, then he won. So there it is. There's my Survivor expertise and like one experience.
Todd is at 12. That seems about right for Todd.
Yep.
Ethan at 13. That's, you know, seems on the money. Tyson at 14, I feel like is low.
Yeah, but who are you going to put him over, I guess? I mean, we talked about Sandra being a little high. right? Like, he played a great game. I thought, like, the Bukauskas brothers were going to just sort of steamroll through that season. I remember interviewing them the day before the game began, and they were so on. I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to own this game. And then the game started, and it looked like that Aris was going to own that game. And then Tyson just sort of came in and took care of it. I have no problem with his ranking here. I don't know that I would put him, well, you know, yeah, you know, Saunders high, we said, I guess Cochran's a little high. Ethan might be a little high. I probably would put Tyson above him. But there's also other people below Tyson that I might put above Tyson. So I think he's about right for me.
What about Jeremy Collins at 15?
Well, there it is. If you want to win Survivor, just play with Stephen Fishback, I guess, right? Make
yeah.
him your island, be a little BFF there, as it were. Played a really strong game, I guess,
yeah.
right? He seems right to me. I mean, in that middle sort of area. I mean, it's weird. There's a lot of people that have played really well, and I don't want to discount, like, Jeremy at 15. He played a great game. I'm glad he won. Thought he played really well. I think there are people who played better, and I think there's probably people who played worse. So that works for me in the middle.
What about the final vote count for you? Say, like, somebody like Jeremy who wins 10-0. Does that move the needle at all for you?
A little bit, but I don't like not completely, because it also just depends how they got there, who they got there with. So it can. And I think, listen, I'll talk more about that and why there's a winner on this list. You might be able to guess who it is, but I won't reveal. Who I think is way too low, but I knew would be really low. And I think that though I would promote him as he should be much, much higher, and yeah, to him, I would say one of the main good arguments for putting him lower would be that final vote.
Tina is 16. I mean, I feel like that's around the right spot for Tina.
Yeah.
Denise Stapley is 17. Again, Denise, you know, I think that Denise could have got lost in the shuffle. I feel like that she's probably really underrated. And I think that she'd be a good pick if they did a winter season.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, only person to go to every single tribal, right? I mean, I don't know if that's she's only or not, but she did in that season. And I think she's a really good pick as well. Was kind of overshadowed by Malcolm, obviously, most of the season, and had that big moment where she had to decide whether to cut him loose or not, and did. But she's good. She's good. She reads people very, very well. And, you know, she is, you know, a sex therapist, right? So she listens to people. That's her profession.
Her and Dr. Mike could be the dream alliance.
Yeah, you might be onto something. We'll see. But yeah, I like that placement of her. I'm glad she didn't end up too low. I was worried she would.
Okay. Natalie Anderson is 18. I think that she's low, too. People are sleeping on 20.
So. I get the only thing I would say, maybe a little bit, people felt she was a little bit of a late bloomer. Remember that whole season was sort of Josh Canfield and Jeremy Collins, right? Like they were sort of the two sort of leaders going head to head. And you didn't see a whole lot of Natalie unless she was yelling at John Rocker until a little bit later after they went out. Now, after they went out, she played gangbusters. She was great. But it wasn't, I guess, if you're going to not vote higher for her, I guess you might say, well, it didn't seem to be a wire-to-wire sort of performance, you know?
Yeah, Sarah Lucina is 19. I really have not tried to place the really recent winners, so this is a difficult exercise for me, but 19, I mean, seems about right?
I mean, I wonder, Rob. I mean, it seems about right is right, but I wonder if she's low. And only because after talking to everyone, and you did the same thing, you talked to everyone after they got it, and they all, after every interview I did, it seemed like everyone was saying, like, well, yeah, I thought I was Sarah's ride or die. I thought I was the one that she wanted to take to the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a game changer season. She really did change her game. She basically turned into Tony, and she said Tony gave her all that advice. And I wonder if she's being a little punished just because she was on a season that people maybe didn't like as much.
Mm-hmm.
But what was really interesting about the poll, just talking generally, is that there was no recency bias on this. You know, like we worry about that if you look at all the recent winners, you know, this is about as high as it gets.
You were punished for recency, I think.
Yeah, I think they were too. I think they were too, which surprised me, because a lot of times when you do these votes, and that shows you, by the way, that you had a lot of really long-term, long-time people voting in this. You know what I mean? I saw there's one or two, like, I see a few people like, oh, you know, the casuals have done it again. And I don't think that's the case at all. First off, this poll was a pain in the ass to fill out.
Right.
It's a really long time. Like, if you took the time to fill this out, you're not a casual fan at all. I also sort of bristle at the whole casuals thing because, you know, I try not to sort of, you know, it's easy for us super nerds to like try and sound elitist and holier than thou and better than other people. But I think we all need to be very careful about that, especially when, you know, I say this as a person that's written more about Survivor than anyone on the planet, which is kind of pathetic when you think about it. If I just devoted that time to something real, I could have accomplished something. But if it weren't for the casuals, we wouldn't be watching this show.
Yeah.
That's like the show's not on the air. I'm not writing about it. Rob, you're not podcasting about it. No one's able to sort of weigh in on those comment boards or Reddit or wherever. So, you know, I know it's annoying when you're like, you know, your cousin comes over and says how much they love Rupert. Might be sort of like a, you know, a little bit of a bummer where you have to have a conversation. But, you know, anyone that wants to engage in Survivor conversation, I always try and welcome.
Yeah. And also, I feel like that anybody that's looking at Survivor content on the internet probably isn't a casual. Like the person who is a casual is like, you know, maybe watches the show if it's on, if they remember it, and isn't thinking about the show at all while it's not on the air. I mean, if you've made it this far to be on the internet looking at Survivor, you're probably not a casual. Are you a super duper fan? Not necessarily if you just made it to the internet, but, there's levels.
Yeah, there's levels and we should welcome, I just think we should, you know, welcome all
levels.
It's a big
tent.
Because yeah, it should be a big tent. You know, it's like, I love, you know, Rob, I love Survivor debate and discussion. There's nothing I love more, but I also love it also to be in a constructive, respectful fashion. And I realize this is crazy when you're talking about the internet and asking for that. But, the, for the most part, everyone's been really cool about this list. And be like, oh, yeah, you know, I disagree. My list would be different. Well, that's the point. Don't we want our list to be different?
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't we all want to have different thoughts and feelings about this? And so it's great. I do get a little disheartened when you see those one or two people that are just, you know, just get really ugly with it. I don't really understand the point of that. Like, we should welcome in all society, not just Survivor, we should welcome diversity of opinions because that leads to interesting conversations.
Earl is 20. Feel like a little low for Earl.
I think that's low too. I think it's low too. I think it's just he won unanimously. You asked about that. Not to the level of Kim or Tom, but he sort of, you know, ran that game from wire to wire in a way, at least his alliance. I think it's a little low too.
Your friend and mine, Jenna Marasca at 21. I have to say, I was actually surprised to see Jenna at 21. I thought that she was going to be lower on the poll.
I did too. I did too. And I'm going to say something really quickly, then shut up because I want to get your opinion because you were out there.
Yeah.
But everyone always talks about Jenna and she had a rep as a really undeserving winner. And if you did think she did well, I guess you'd send her on the social game, but she won 4 individual immunities. Mm-hmm. That's not easy. It's not easy. You got to give her due for that. She won 4 individual immunities, but you give me your perspective on this, Rob.
And I really think that she's a very strong player and I think would, again, be overlooked if she ever did play again and could potentially be in that Sandra category of a 2-time winner. But when I did my exercise of going through this, I was trying to identify people that had the most control for the longest period of time. And maybe there was a point in time when, you know, they didn't exactly have their finger on the pulse. So I feel like that there's a little period in the game where Jenna is not necessarily controlling things. She ends up going on the immunity run towards the end. I did penalize her in my winner rankings in terms of her wanting to leave the game, whether or not, you know, how much that was strategy. So you know, I don't have her as one of the elite winners of the game, but I think that, you know, she really has a lot of the skill sets of a great player.
Yeah, I think 20s is right for her. And it's what's interesting, Rob, is what you just said, because this certainly doesn't always hold true. Tom Westman dominated Palau from start to finish, and I really like that season a lot. But a lot of times I find that the seasons, not always, but sometimes the seasons that you like least have great winners. And maybe that's because they control the game so much that it's predictable. And, you know, remember the old days of Survivor before there was you know, 30 advantages every week, you know, and changing everything up, is that, you know, the downside of it is you knew who was going home every week, or you knew who was going to make it to the end. And, you know, the people like that, that dominate from coast to coast, didn't necessarily make for interesting seasons. Amazon's a season I absolutely love. You know that. I love that season. And one of the reasons, because it was so, even before all those idols, this is pre-idols and advantages, people, there was just shake-ups.
Back in my day, we had to shake up the game without idols.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. And look, I could go on a whole idols and advantages rant, which is a sidebar conversation. But yeah, but that's why Amazon's such a great season. And you're totally right, though, is that she was not controlling it, you know, for long stretches.
Yeah. Key contributor, though. I don't want to disparage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chris Daugherty is number 22. Chris did not have a great pre-merge game, but then really came alive towards the end. He was really like the first person to be like the one that was counted out from really far back who ended up running the table.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, respect for that. But you said it, like what happened sort of pre-merge. I feel like in the low 20s is a good place for him. I think the fans are in the right area here.
Yeah. Aris is 23. Sophie is 24.
Can I say one quick thing about Aris? This was fascinating. There are a few weird quirks of the poll if you dig into the math on it. And one of the biggest, the one that really surprised me, is Aris got the least amount of first place votes of everyone. Least amount.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that crazy? Like, I'm not saying people should have been flooding the box for Aris, you know, as the best winner ever. But I was surprised that he got less than every single other person, including all the people below him on this list.
Yeah. You know, I think that he's probably, you know, he himself calls himself the boring winner. And maybe that he sort of like gets forgotten about in the middle in terms of what he did, you know, get so many other big characters in that season. So that could be part of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And there's other people that people knew were going to be low, so probably tried to wait high to try to counterbalance that. And we'll get into one of those, you know, one or two of those maybe later. But yeah, he's just, everyone kind of put him in the middle.
Okay.
He's exactly right.
Sophie, 24, you know, Sophie, I think, is another really great player. You know, I can understand why people don't have her higher. You know, a lot of people don't love that season also of South Pacific.
I do like that season. I'm one of the few people that likes it.
Yeah, I think it was better on the rewatch. I really enjoyed it more the second time around.
Yeah, I liked it, which is weird because I hate the Redemption Island twist, but I actually kind of like that season.
Yeah, Brian Heidick at 25 also feels low. I know I say everybody feels low, but Brian Heidick.
I know. No, this is the one that I think is way too low. And, you know, I'm now going to like rehash my whole argument for why Heidick should be in the Survivor Hall of Fame that Gordon does off and on for years. And no one ever votes him in. And I get it. I get why people don't, you know, you just say his name and you sort of feel like you need to sort of, you know, take a shower and clean off a little bit. But if we're talking about solely just controlling the game from start to finish, that was Brian Heidick. You know what I mean? He won the last three, maybe, immunity challenges. He controlled the game socially. He made all those final two deals with everyone and then sort of broke them off. He controlled the Iceman, he called himself. If you're just going to base on how someone controlled and ran the game, Heidick ran the game. Now, I mentioned that there'd be a counter argument to that, and that is where we get back to what you asked about the votes of the final tribal. Because if you want to say Heidick's no good, you're overestimating him, I guess the first thing you'd go to say, like, he could only beat Clay by a single vote. And that is kind of damning.
Yeah.
That's pretty damning. If you're only beating Clay, who you look up GOAT in the dictionary, you might see him there. If you only beat that guy by one vote, that's not good news. But I still think Heidick is, you know, whatever. He's a used car salesman. He's the soft porn star, whatever. And it was a terrible season, right? Really,
he shot a dog with a bow and arrow. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons to not feel good about placing him high. But if I try and, you know, just be robotic about it and talk about the job they did to get that $1 million, I think I would have him much higher.
Also, I think that he, and you touched on this, that he had a deal with everybody. I think he's really the first player who is the person with like multiple final twos where, you know, Rich basically, you know, he had Rudy was his final two, and maybe like Keith and Colby both wanted to bring Tina to the end, but you know, he had a deal with everybody, and he's really the first person who's going to play the game that way.
I feel like, Rob, I feel like this was the first season as a viewer when you were watching. And I know a lot of fans have come later. We have a younger fan, so that maybe they watch the seasons out of order. You know, you start with the great ones and whatever, but yeah, if you're watching chronologically, I do feel this was the first time you're watching it. And like three or four of them, you're yelling at them, like, get rid of him. Like, you know, like they're trying to get Helen, right, to like turn on him. And she's like, no, I think he's going to take me to the end. It's later what Boston Rob did in Redemption Island, right? It's, this is a much earlier version of that. And you're kind of screaming at your TV screen. And it's what kind of what it actually was one of the problems of the season, because it was frustrating to watch in that way. But yeah, he ran it, man.
Mike Holloway is 26. And I mean, I kind of get that it was more of a win based on challenge dominating than alliances and strategy. So I can understand why he gets penalized in the vote here.
Yeah, it's like a Brad Culpepper performance, right? In a way, it's just that he won the vote and Culpepper didn't. He had that one just total brain fart at the immunity auction, remember? Where he promised to do something that didn't and gave it back, and it was just like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, winning 5 out of 6 immunity challenges is very, very impressive, but I think he's probably around the right spot.
Okay. Danny at 27. Again, I feels like that, like there's like the nostalgia for a lot of the, you know, more classic players, with the exception of Brian Heidick. And then you're like this Aris, you know, Danny Boatwright area, Earl. Like it feels like the mid early teens feels like they've got forgotten about.
This is why you're so good, Rob. I had not even put my finger on that at all. You're totally 100% right. You know, yeah, you get all these early teen things and they're all kind of vaguely in the same area. It's like, it's not like old enough to be classic, you know, worship Survivor. It's not recent enough. They're just kind of in that no man's land and they all kind of, let's be honest, a lot of them played no man's land type games, right? I mean, just meaning like not great, not terrible, fine. You know, we'll put you in the 20s.
Jan Brady winner era of Survivor. Okay, another person I played with, Amber Berkich, 28 on the list.
Yeah, you know, this is I thought my opinion, clearly Boston Rob should have won this season. And I understand the thinking of that. Some people will say there's no such thing as bitter juries. I respectfully disagree. I think Boston Rob did a whole lot to win this season. And I understand the point of you have to know the people you're playing with and what you can get away with in terms of burning them. But, you know, he burned them in one season, Redemption Island, and one overwhelmingly burned them here. I mean, so to me, Amber, I figured wouldn't be high because I think people felt that I think whenever people feel that there's someone more deserving sitting next to the person that won, they're probably low. And I think that's the way, while I understand that everyone feels that way, I think as proven out by the fan voting here, the majority of people that feel that way, and I'm guessing you feel that way, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is what it is. I feel like that when I went back and rewatched it after not looking at it for a really long time, I feel like that there were some more things that I hadn't quite noticed. She's actually probably better in the challenges, I think, than people remember, but, you know, it really is the, you know, Rob exerting his will on that season, and she does do, you know, a couple of things along the way. I think that she ends up, you know, playing that point in the game where they vote out Jerry instead of her pretty well. And I have to say that, like, I feel like that she was probably pretty instrumental in pushing for me to go out as well. So that's a winning move right there.
That was the move right there. Now, I'm curious, how did Lex's mohawk play on the second viewing?
Even better. Even better.
Did it? Okay. Yeah. It aged well with time. Good. Yeah. I was just wondering about that.
They really, you know, raked Rob over the coals, you know, on the reel. It's like, Rob, how could you do this to us? And, you know, and I don't know if he's playing it up or, but he's really just like, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have done that, you guys. I was, you know.
Oh, my God. How crazy was that reunion show at Madison Square Garden?
It was crazy. Remember when Jerry walked off?
Booed off the stage. Yeah, booed off the stage. Craziness.
Yeah, that was a crazy night.
Those are the days. Yeah.
All right, Adam Klein is 29 on the list out of 34 winners.
Yeah, a perfect winner, right? 10-0-0.
Yeah.
Over Ken and Hannah. And a lot of last place votes, Rob. More than 1 out of 10 people put Adam in the bottom spot as the worst winner ever. What do you make of that?
I think that we're onto something here where I feel like that even this season, and we can get into your season rankings also, I felt like that a lot of people are like, oh, this is the worst season. That I just feels like that there's something in the air. Like whatever is recent, I feel like is just not, it's just, oh, this is not as good. Why can't it be like the old days? Like I wonder if this is a little bit of like old man yells at cloud of some of these recent winners being so low.
Well, it's interesting because I get where you're going with that, but also don't we all generally really like that season though? I feel like Millennials versus Gen X, it just started a little slow, right? Like, but I feel like that's sort of those recent past, I mean, and Second Chance, I think everyone really liked a lot, but that also had returning players, so it's a little weird. But in terms of newbie seasons, I feel like Millennials versus Gen X is sort of the most liked of all those recent sort of, you know, five, six seasons or so. So I don't know. I mean, listen, I'm not going to sit here and say Adam Klein deserves to be so much higher. And I feel at 29, like I'm actually kind of fine with that. I was surprised with all the last place votes. And I think, you know, maybe you're onto something there.
Okay. 30 here is Bob Crowley. And I feel like I feel like that's about right. With all due respect to Bob Crowley.
I think that's about right, too. I think that's about right. Poor Bob sent a really cute tweet when I tweeted out that, hey, we're doing this fan poll. He's like, can it just be on, like, can we just do a poll on oldest Survivor winners ever? Like, he'll always be number one if we do that. But unfortunately, it wasn't. But, yeah, again, kind of, you know, not a dynamic winner in what I would say was not a dynamic season. That's kind of a deadly mix.
You have Vesepia. I was going to say you. The poll. Yeah,
it's not me. People still think it's me. Yeah, this is not my list.
the Electoral College has Vesepia at number 31.
Yeah, that's, you know.
Vesepia never got any love. Even when she won, she was like, all right, well, she's 4 out of 4.
Yeah, immediately she got no love from production or CBS or anyone. I like Marquesas, and Probst really never liked this season, ever. He's never liked Marquesas. I really liked it. It's the first season where you really had that flip, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where they all flipped on Dr. John. I'm not talking about the musician.
Yeah.
You know, gave us, you know, Boston Rob and Sean and some fun characters. So I've always liked this season, but one of the things that people have held against this season is a very weak final two. And I will say that I can't argue that too much. I can't say that it was a very dynamic final two.
Yeah,
so
and a bitter jury. Yeah. A lot of things going wrong there towards the last couple episodes. But Pascal got purple rocked. I don't remember if people like that or not.
Oh, I know he did. I remember watching that go down. I just couldn't believe it. It was crazy. Yeah.
Well, people really wanted Kathy to win. I think that's also a part of it.
Yes. Well, she peed on a guy's hand.
Mm-hmm.
If you pee on a guy's hand, that should be like a fast pass, like an Amazing Race sort of, you know, like express pass to like the $1 million. I mean, it's pretty baller move.
Yeah. But Vesepia, I think she was Sandra before Sandra.
Yes, she was.
Yeah, she would have gone with whatever vote was coming up, as long as it wasn't Sean. Then Natalie White is 32 here at the list.
Oof. That's, you know, that's the, I still think that's the most obviously heavily debated one ever. It's the whole, like, did Russell deserve to win or did he not deserve to win? I feel like that's when Survivor fandom gets the most heated.
Yes.
I always said I love respectful exchange of opinions, and it seems a lot of people get really, really upset if you don't feel the same way they feel about this and the whole Natalie Russell thing.
Is that still a thing, though? Do people still feel strongly about it?
Because I say I think Russell deserved to win, I still get people, just tweeting at me, calling me an idiot and stuff, which is, par for the course, I guess. But, I still get it. I mean, I don't know how you feel about this season. And people still
like
debate it around you, but...
I like it. The thing I will say about Natalie White is she did kill a rat. No. I will say that, and I actually have her ahead of Amber in my rankings. I have her one spot ahead of Amber only because that I think that if you go back and you watch that season, I think she is kind of saying like, hey, I know that Russell is, pissing everybody off, and I think I'll be in a good spot if I sit next to him. Whereas I don't think that Amber along the way is like, hey, I think that Rob is, I'm going to I think that Rob will go to the end and lose and I'll win. I don't think that she's thinking that in the same way that Natalie White is thinking. OK, I'll be here for the ride and then everybody will be pissed at him.
Almost 1 out of 10 people put her in the bottom spot. She had the, third highest amount of last place votes, and she came in sort of right in that same spot.
Okay, then here down at the rear, Michelle Fitzgerald at number 33. Again, I feel like that this is the same thing with Adam Klein. There's no way Michelle Fitzgerald is 33 out of 34.
It's also the same thing as, it's not the same thing, but it's also heavily debated.
Yes.
The whole Michelle versus Aubrey thing is still very contentious, and people are really split on Michelle. Just to give you a sort of nerd out on the math a little bit, she got the 11th most first place votes.
Mm-hmm.
If this were a simple thing that just vote for who's the best Survivor winner ever, and if people are wondering why I didn't do that, I don't think that's representative, because basically 80% of the people only voted for six people. 80% of Survivor fans voted for those top six, Parvati through Kim. So to really get a fair representation, what you had to do was rank them all, which required a lot more work. But Michelle got the 11th most first place votes, but she also got tons and tons of bottom five votes.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Michelle fans were out in full force voting for her. And then all the people that thought that Aubrey was robbed were voting against her. There was no middle ground with Michelle Fitzgerald, none whatsoever. It was all high or low. And obviously by her coming in 33rd, a lot more low than high. Although she had tons of first place votes, there was like nothing in 2 through 5. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm telling you, Dalton, Michelle Fitzgerald will win the Survivor All Winners season.
Yeah.
Mark it down.
I could see it. You know what I mean? I could see it. And I'm someone that thinks that that Aubrey deserved to win that season.
Yeah.
I thought Aubrey played the best game. I thought that, Jason and Scott couldn't handle being beaten by a woman. And, because she was a strong woman that sort of did what had to be done. I think that their ego couldn't handle that. That's just my take.
Yeah. And then bringing up the rear is Fabio. I get it. I get it. He's got him right around that spot. I think I actually have Bob at the bottom of my list.
Well, I mean, Fabio he won 3 straight immunities to close the season. Like, let's go to the positives. Let's at least try. He did win 3 straight.
Sure.
So that's something, right?
Yeah.
But we all knew that he was going to be at the very bottom, or at least near the very bottom. Survivor Nicaragua is my least favorite season ever, and now the fans have made him the least favorite winner ever, according to the fan vote. It's just a double whammy for Survivor Nicaragua.
Yeah, I guess that and Gabon are the two seasons that have like low winners, and also like it's not like where it's like a really crazy season. Or I guess that is the embodiment of that, the theory of like, so if like Kim and Boston Rob are dominant, but it's a boring season.
Yeah, Brian Heidick was dominant in a boring season.
Yeah.
And
then you could also have like maybe a boring season with a not great winner.
Right. Yeah. This is just, it's the worst of all worlds. It's like the anti-Hannah Montana, you know what I mean? It's just everything has gone wrong. Poor Fabio's in the bottom spot. Listen, here's the thing. The dude won $1 million. All these people won $1 million. All these people, it's very hard to get to the end. Yes, there's a lot of luck involved. Yes, in the past few seasons, we've seen even more luck involved in Survivors. They add in more ways, sort of get out of jail free cards. you know, that you find in your napkin mm-hmm. at a reward feast. But it's still very, very difficult to get to the end and then ask people to hand you $1 million. And so, you know, while people, like Natalie or Bob or, Fabio or Adam may have been kind of near the bottom of this list, still, look, congratulations to them. They won $1 million. They lasted all 39 days.
Okay. And then Dalton, last thing before I let you go. So you put out your season rankings. You always put it in your next to last recap of the season. And so you have 35 season rankings and you have just added Survivor Heroes, Healers versus Hustlers to the list at
number 17. Right, pretty much smack dab in the middle, which is funny because last year I put Game Changers number 17. And I'm shocked I put it this high, Rob, because you and I just spoke about this a week ago in Austin. And I think you were saying how you liked it a little more than I did, but it has built every week. I thought, and you know, again, I feel like I over judge. I sort of give extra points to shows that build. I think like a good movie or a good football game, you know, it's better to have a good second half than a first half. You know, you want to build. And so I tend to, grade those a little higher. It's right in the middle. It could go up or down the finale. Probst is promising an incredible finale. So we'll see about that. I feel good, not great about it. I didn't feel great about this season pre-merge. I feel better about it now. We could talk about what's worked, what didn't work. But I'm curious your take on this season, because one of the things that I have a little bit of a hang up on about this season, and maybe it's nothing and maybe I'm overanalyzing or just being stupid, but I feel like I don't have a good feel on how these players feel about each other. You know what I mean? Like, it used to be, you sort of knew who was with whom, who didn't like whom, who was like, I don't really have a good sense all season in terms of how the jury feels. Like, what does the jury think of Mike? I really honestly don't have much of an idea. What do they think about Ryan? I don't know. Even Devin, to a degree, I think they all like Devin. But does that make sense in terms of with all these big moves and I'm a strategy nerd. I love all that stuff. But I feel like we're not getting a sense of how people are perceived by each other. Is that crazy? Do you feel that at all?
You know, I get that. I think that one of the issues is that it's been, somewhat fluid, where it was sort of everybody against the healers, where we came into the merge and, you know, you sort of like, you knew where the healers were at. But then in terms of that bigger group of nine, you didn't really know all of the interpersonal relationships from there. But I do have to say that I really like this cast, and I feel like that it has been a lot of fun, especially over the last couple of weeks.
Let me ask you another question that I was sort of mulling over, because I like everyone that's left. I know a lot of people don't like Chrissy. I actually like Chrissy. I like them all. And on one hand, I think it's really good, and I'm happy about that. On the other hand, I kind of like it when you have one or two people you're really rooting for a lot more, and you have one or two that you really can't stand. Mm-hmm. 'Cause then you have that, I feel like the best seasons have that rooting interest for and against. I kind of like everyone kind of vaguely the same. I could order them, but I kind of like them all, which then is a good thing, but it also makes me feel like when you're cool with anyone winning, you're not on the edge of your seat maybe quite as much. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I definitely hear what you're saying. I feel like that when you have like a Johnny Fairplay, Russell out there. I mean, even Tony, and I know that Joe got a lot of Tony comparisons, but I feel like that they did, a few things to, show us the likable side of Joe along the way. So, you know, on the one hand, Survivor does a good job of showing everybody as like a three-dimensional person, but we haven't really had like that one uber villain in Survivor in a while.
I mean, the Tony versus Wu final is such a great example you make there, because, you know, you've got a lot of people, and I know maybe not a lot of us super nerds, but a lot of people watching in America that are like dying to watch Tony go down, right? Like, they want, Wu is nice. Wu's so great with kids, and what a great, nice, upstanding guy. And he tried to do what he thought was the right thing. And so they just want to see Tony go down. Then there's the other people like, Tony played the best game. Oh my God, Wu, what are you thinking? Bring me in. So as they're going to tribal council, you're really invested in that outcome. And the question becomes, when you have sort of three people going to Final Three and you all kind of like all of them sort of the same, then are you going to be as on edge? So it's a stupid complaint to make. Oh, I like everyone. It's a dumb complaint. And so I try not to voice it too loudly, but I do think it's kind of interesting in terms of how then we view the season going forward. And as you know, and I've gone on about it over and over, I'm very conflicted about all the idols and advantages. It sounds like I'm dissing them and dismissing them all the time. I'm really not, because I think they've generally added so much to the game. And I like the way that most of the advantages were contained to a single tribal council. But I really do worry about just the element of luck. And well, now it seems like every single tribal council has to have some sort of advantage or idol played. It just, it's, you know, when something happens so often, it becomes less special. And I worry, while this is very exciting on a week-to-week basis, if we continue to have an advantage or idol every single week, like, you know, where are we going to be feeling about this in a year or two?
Right. The issue, I think, is not necessarily, like, I don't think that Survivor set out to make a season of, like, let's put a million idols into the game, because I think that they've followed the same rules that they've had for quite some time of, okay, each camp in the pre-merge has an idol, and then if that gets played, then we'll like rehide the idol. I mean, the issue I think has been that so many idols have been played this season. I think that seven idols have been found, and Lauren got voted out with one half in her pocket and the other half in the fire. But I think then maybe six idols have been played over the course of the season to this point. So it's been a lot of idols played and then put back into circulation. I think that's part of it. But I think that maybe that Survivor needs to go back to the well, literally and figuratively, in terms of hiding the idols and maybe making it a little more difficult for people to find the idols, especially like when we get to the point where they could be out there, but maybe, you know, you need to get the clue, you know, to have like there be a little bit more of a hurdle in front of the players to not just, okay, because every time we see somebody go out to find the idol, like, you know, they pretty much come back with it at some point.
Yeah, and there's two things to that. You're right, they're following the basic rules, but remember, when they go to three tribes, and that's more idols, right? Mm-hmm. And then when they do this thing where they put this, they hide the idol in the same place at all the camps, and we saw Ty do it, and then we saw Joe do it, and all, you know, and then we saw, because Cole knew where it was, they found, like, then, you know, I hate when they hide idols at the same place at the same camps. If you know what I mean? Because it's just, one person can hoard idols, and people are finding them too easily, and we're using the same idol rules, fine, but now we've added in advantages, right?
Yeah.
So now, and it started off with one advantage. How many advantage? We saw there's going to be another advantage at the finale. I don't know what it makes for this year. Is that four, five?
Like, I think it's three advantages. There was the day one advantage. There was the advantage that Jessica got in the bag of chips. And then Lauren got the advantage to get the extra vote.
And then we'll have another one at the end here.
Right.
I liked the way that the first two were contained to a single episode. I really liked the way that they forced people to make choices. If you don't go, you know, put it on someone else or give it to someone else. So I like all that. I just think, and I know they're keeping in mind so no one else gets Sereed, which was sort of a travesty, but it's just something I think they need to look at going forward. You know, the game evolves, the game changes. I think in general, the Survivor producers have done a great job of evolving the game. I think they should continue to try things because that's the only way you find out if it works. Even if it's like that terrible loved ones reward marble challenge where Josh Wiggler, I don't know what he's smoking like in that thing, but we all have those, but you know, they should try things and they'll have to continue to tweak as they move forward. But that is something I think they need to look at.
Okay. But one thing, Dalton, I think that you have right in a big way is that Survivor Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, the best North American Survivor season of 2017.
And I still haven't watched Survivor Australia because I just haven't had the time. You know, I wish they do pay me to write and watch Survivor, but I have to do a lot of other things. And I know Survivor Australia is a big time commitment.
Yeah, hold out for that.
I need to do it. I want to do it. And I haven't had a chance to do it yet, but I'm looking forward to doing it at some point. Maybe if they weren't putting Celebrity Big Brother on the air, I'd have some time to go do that. Not that I'm complaining about Celebrity Big Brother, any stretch of the imagination.
Do you have one draft pick for Celebrity Big Brother? Who do you want to see in that house?
You know what? I haven't really thought about it. That's a good question. I haven't thought about it. Here, what I'll do is say this. What I don't want to see is rehashed celebrities, reality contestants. You know, the ones we've seen on Dancing with the Stars and Celebrity Apprentice and some of these other two-bit ones that come for, you know, a week and get canceled a week later. Like that one where they were like cops or they were like on a diving board, you know, or they're ice skating. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to, I don't want to see recycled people. I know Julie Chen, I think, was it Dice Clay that she kept bringing up that she wanted to have? And he was, he's recycled. He went out first on Celebrity Apprentice. I'd like to see some new people. I'd like to see some new people. What about you? Do you have a dream contestant?
No, I hope that we just get some fun people. You know, I sort of in my mind, I was thinking, is there a chance that Omarosa is going to be on Celebrity Big Brother?
But oh,
I
feel my like that's God, don't say it.
This is better than zero chance.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Omarosa because then they put her from Regular Apprentice onto Celebrity Apprentice. Do you think they will put a regular Big Brother contestant, like a Dr. Will on Celebrity Big Brother or not?
Well, I actually had said this when they announced it. I think that probably the best chance that you ever have of Will Kirby playing Big Brother again would be in a celebrity edition because, one, it would come in, he'd come in, be a weak field. He'd get to hobnob with celebrities. It's going to be 18 days. Seems very doable for him.
Yeah. By the way, we did, you know, we did the same Survivor winners poll we did with Big Brother, and he was number one by a pretty wide margin. You know, we get to see him every season, right? Interviewing the jury, peppering the jury with questions.
Yeah. He should do it. He'd come back. He'd win. That nobody would be able to make the, Dan is better argument anymore. He'd come in and just smoke these celebrities. none of them would know his game. None of them would be like, oh, we got to vote out Dr. Will. It would be a great spot for him.
You know what he would do would be great is if he came in and then he just started using all other players' strategies, like acting like they're his ideas, like did his own funeral or did the five finger plan of Nokomis. And just all of a sudden, like, hey, like I got this idea. I just started like just ripping off everybody else. Because you know these celebrities have never watched a day of Big Brother. If they have, they're not going deep knowledge on it.
Yeah, he could probably tell them that he was never even on Big Brother. He's just like a celebrity from something they don't know.
Who are you? Oh, just celebrity surgeon, you know, like plastic surgeon. That's all I am.
You know, you do plastic surgery? Whatever. Oh, okay. I want to stay on your good side. Like, oh, okay, great.
Speaking of which is my good side? I don't know. We'll have to see. Can't wait.
All right. Well, Dalton, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and nerding out about all this Survivor stuff with us. And really, great job on putting this all together.
It was fun to put together. It was fun. And look, we don't all agree. And that's the fun of it, is that we don't agree. I look at that as a positive, not a negative. I always love geeking out with you. It's the best. I appreciate anyone that's listened this long. I appreciate anyone that, like, you know, is a patron of Rob's and goes to his stuff or reads my stuff or other people's because, you know, it's great to have this community for a show that's been on now going into its 36th season. It's absolutely crazy. It's insane that still going this strong, and it's because of everyone else and their interest. So it's awesome. I love doing it.
Okay, so check out Dalton weekdays on EW Morning Live, and of course on Twitter at Dalton Ross, and in everything Entertainment Weekly. Dalton, thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
Everybody, there you have it. Dalton Ross, thank you so much for checking out this bonus coverage of Rob is a Podcast. We've got a voicemail show coming up for you guys with Mike Bloom as well this weekend. It probably will be recorded by the time you are listening to this, but I just know from all of the things that we are setting up, it should be maybe the most jam-packed voicemail feedback show of the entire season as we get ready for Wednesday night's finale. Of course, Steven will have all of the coverage right after the episode with Survivor winner Sophie Clark. I will be at the finale and I will have all of the coverage from the red carpet that should be dropping for you guys on Thursday morning. And then Josh Wigler and I will be covering everything the day after, like we have done for some time now. So a really jam-packed amount of finale coverage is going to be coming your way as well. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Rob has a website.com/iTunes. Holiday shopping gift ideas. Rob has a website.com/gifts. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.